Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rugby League European Federation podcast again. And this time is slightly different. We have two guests with us on this occasion because we're covering the Great Britain Students Pioneers. They've already come up a number of times in discussions with other guests, and therefore we thought we'd hone in on them this time. And joining me is Gerard Keenan and Keith Sandu, two very important figures in the history of the Great Britain Student Pioneers. Firstly, hello, Gerard. How are you?
Hello, Graham. Nice to speak with you. I'm doing well. Hope you are.
I am. Whereabouts are you joining us from, Gerard?
I'm in lovely North Wales.
Ah, great. Whereabouts in North Wales?
Abergele, about 300 yards from the sea, and yet at the same time, looking out over the hills with sheep and horses literally in the back garden.
Oh, sounds great. Sounds great. And Keith, welcome to you. How are you?
Yeah. Thanks, Graham. Yeah, I'm all right. Thanks. Yeah, can't complain too much. You know how it is.
Okay. And whereabouts are you based in nowadays, Keith?
Yeah, so Yorkshire, sort of born and bred and still in that area. So from Leeds. Just based in Leeds.
Okay. Welcome, guys. And the first question I always ask my guests is, What is your first ever memory of rugby league? So, Gerard, what's your first memory in your life of rugby league?
Well, although I'm in North Wales, I'm a Wigan lad, born and bred. So, sometimes I find that quite hard to answer because it rugby league has always been there. I went to a school that it's known by a few people, St. Patrick's School, under a headmaster named Mr. McDermott, who was famous for rugby league. But one of the early memories I've got, we lived about 300 yards from the old Central Park Wigan ground, was being led off early from school when it was a Wigan Warrington Challenge Cup replay, and running straight from school over the new developments that were taking place, the footings of houses, to turn up at 3:30 kickoff before the year of floodlights.
Right, okay, fantastic. And Keith, for you, what was your first memory?
I think, it's weird. I didn't get into rugby league until probably a bit later on, so we're about sort of 16, 17 at the time, and it was a local club. It was Cal Pratt, who used to play at Bradford, or I think he just retired, sort of collared me one day. I'm like, oh, do you fancy giving this a go? Went down, had a go, and it was a bit of a beasting, actually, the first session. I don't think I'll ever forget that. But, enjoyed it. I just loved all the boys, actually, and the whole sort of, ethos of them. You know, they're all friendly, got along. It was a real good club environment, and that's probably my earliest memory. It's a thrashing, I think. it was train hard, play hard, but was the motto, I think. So, yeah, that was, it sort of stuck with me, that.
Great, great. So, listen, the Great Britain Student Pioneers first took off in 2005. So Gerard is one of the founding figures. Can you just give us a bit of background as to how they came to be?
Yeah, with pleasure, Graham. Well, it began with one of your previous contributors. Kevin Rudd was then the development officer with the Rugby League European Federation. And I've been involved with student rugby league for quite a few years. I used to be a head coach with Ireland students. And Kevin approached myself and a colleague, John Pearcy, who many people in rugby league will know, and said, can we have a meeting? Because they have this idea about how we can develop the rugby league in these nations where he's getting lots of interest. So we got together and we identified that students were in many, many ways the ideal people to go out to these developing countries, not just to give them a game, but to help teach them, coach them, but tell them and show them what rugby league was all about.
Okay, and what was the particular choice of name, the Pioneers? Is that sort of to sort of encapture what you just talked about there?
Yeah, precisely. The official name was the Chairman's 13, and it was supported by David Oxley at the time. So it was originally the Chairman's 13, but we picked up the nickname, which is a little bit catchier, the Pioneers. because the whole principle was about going to the new countries which have had no previous involvement of rugby league or minimal involvement, and perhaps going to some places where the territory isn't necessarily ideal. In other words, going to places where it could be a little bit tough going, but we'd have the right sort of guys in the team and in the management squad who could cope with whatever's thrown at them. And all the years, perhaps as we might discuss, there have been a few challenges, whether it's been in Ukraine or Kazakhstan or in Ghana or Albania.
Yeah, it's interesting. In terms of the pioneers, my own background was student rugby league. That's how I got into the game, and up in Scotland. And I think that name is really encapsulates, you know, that idea that to go somewhere not gone before, and in some ways is to not get too worried about what you find there. You know, almost play what's in front of you, you know, and just enjoy it for what it is, not just on the park, but off the park as well, as an experience for the players. That must have been part of the thinking as well for the student players to gain new experiences.
In every way, that was part of it, Graham, which is to bring our fantastic sport to these people who are expressing an interest, but to have the lads with us who, if anything, it would also open their eyes as to what was going on. And student rugby league is great because we always used to say you could probably pick any third division team out of the Pennine League or from the Northwest Counties League who could perhaps go to and play some of these teams in terms of pure quality. But we wanted the lads with the right concept of developing the game. So, for example, we tried to pick not just decent players, but lads who themselves were running, coaching, organising their own university teams. So they could be in London or the Midlands or in Scotland and get the right guys so that the whole experience in every way was a development experience for the people, the new guys who played, but for the lads who took part in it.
Okay. So, Keith, you were closely involved. You were one of your early tours, wasn't it, on one of the Pioneers? Which was your first tour?
Yeah, my first tour was going over to Ukraine to play them there. So, yeah, that was a good journey. Some interesting memories from there. I think, you know, one of the ones sticks out is the overnight train and the hole in the bottom of the floor for the toilet. I think that was a memory what stuck out. But yeah, no, we went over there. We played. It was quite a well organized tour, actually. I'm sure Jed, you can take the credit for that. But you know, they were definitely really up for it. You know, we were sort of told, yeah, it's a bit about the development and getting out there and, you know, doing some work, not just with the players there, actually in the local communities. But I suppose when we got there, the quality was a lot better than what we thought. And yeah, it was a tough game, a really physical lot. I remember the guy, Arta, who sort of sticks out a bit there. He really looked after us, took us round. I think we ended up meeting the local mayor and they took us on a guided tour of the city. So they're really taking it seriously. So it was good. Yeah, that was my first time touring.
So Jed, were you on that first tour to Estonia in 2005? And what other staff did you have with you at the time?
Yeah, well, yes, I was on that trip. And for those first six tours, myself and a colleague, John Pearcy, we were involved. I took on the role of team manager, which involved the recruitment of the players and everything to do with playing. And then John was our tour manager who did a fantastic job in organising booking flights because we're typical students, aren't we? We wanted to keep things as cheap as possible. So it was Ryanair wherever possible, no matter what the time of the flight was. And John organised all that side of things. And for those 20 players who took part, they'll never forget playing on the Hippodrome. Not the theatre, not the stage, but a racetrack in the centre of Tallinn. And that's where we trained and played. And had a great few days taking our first participation in Estonian Rugby League.
Right. And just how important was it also to get the right coach? you know, in terms of understanding, you know, playing against the opposition, preparing the lads properly and buying into the whole ethos?
Well, you know, the coach has got two things. One is he's got to have all the ability of bringing this group of 20 lads together. And very often we'd not met previously. I knew every player and I'd always seen every player before we went. But the coach had to bring them together within the space of a short few days. Yet, as we all know from any tour, a coach is in many ways your leading light and the tone he's on the tour is important. So again, we didn't know the environment we were going into. So we used to liaise with the Student Rugby League, people like Matt Jeffrey, and Matt would give us a little tip off, you know, I've got this guy at Huddersfield Uni, or I've got a guy in whichever unit, he'd be a good guy for what we are setting out to achieve.
Okay. So, Keith, I think your second trip was Norway. So, you know, you've obviously enjoyed your first win. You're back to Norway. Give us a bit of an idea how, as a player, you felt that ethos and coming together was achieved.
Yeah, good question, actually. Yeah, because it is. I mean, obviously, I'd already been on one tour, so I sort of knew, you know, what we're all about and what to expect from sort of staff and players' perspective. I was lucky enough to be captain that year as well. So I suppose one of my roles there was to help with that gelling. And I remember chatting with the coach and Andy Jordan, actually was the head coach for that tour. And we're almost, yeah, that's the biggest challenge, actually. You know what, we've got a group of lads together. We had one weekend before the tour just to prep and go through some of the players, whatever we needed to do. And then, you know, you're expected just to get on and gel, really. So it's, it was challenging, but it was good. And actually, in a really short amount of time, because all the lads were of a similar mindset, just loved the sport, you know, on and off the pitch, you know. So got on really well, gelled really well, and it worked really well.
And as opposed to a new country, which perhaps has limited rugby league infrastructure, you've got to be prepared for the, you know, unplanned, or perhaps it's not quite as you thought it was going to be. Presumably that was a key thing to prep guys on.
Yeah, it was. It was just to let them know, actually, you know, it's not, you know, it depends. Actually. Sometimes you'll be in a stadium, sometimes you won't. Other times you'll be in a local park and getting shooed off by somebody at some point. So it was just making them all aware, actually, lads, you know what, we're here. Not many people in the city will know. So if I talk about Norway, for example, we all had some sort of kit and we were walking around and people just didn't have a clue, actually, what even rugby league was. So, you know, we spent a few days just getting around and chatting to local people about it. So yes, I suppose it's, for us, it was the unknown in terms of what we were walking into, but actually everybody else around didn't really know what was going on either. So when we were trying to advertise and try and get people to the game, they're like, well, what's this rugby league you're speaking of? Is it? I'm trying to think what one of them tried to explain. It was like basketball. I was like, no, it's nothing like basketball. But it was a key bit of that.
So it must be quite amazing to say, last year Norway took part in a World Cup qualifier with Greece, you know, got reasonably close to the Men's World Cup, but then they're going to be at the Wheelchair World Cup, you know, and there you were, what, 12, 13 years ago, you know, right at the start.
Yeah, no, do you know what? It does feel good because, you know, even some of the lads, we still stay in touch from that time. We just say, look, God, they've come such a long way in, I'm not saying a short amount of time, but actually from a group of lads with, you know, relatively good structure, a bit of a union background to them and a good committee and stuff, but they've really pushed it and really, you know, they've got teams playing in local leagues. I believe they've got a ladies set up and stuff now. So, you know, they have come a long way within a short amount of time because, I can see from some of the other tours I've been on, it can be really challenging just to get simple accreditations in places. You know, I'll probably talk about Morocco later, but there was so much political stuff that went on there and we ended up sort of only playing one game out of the three. And I think some ended up in the European Parliament over it as well. So it's, yeah, to see where countries are going to from when they started, it was great. And you know, I suppose shame about the Ukraine, what happened there and so, because they seem to be progressing really well, then obviously, you know, they had their own sort of issues as a country then, and that's probably just knocked them back a little bit. But it is. Yeah, it's been great.
They're still going well, and Arter is still at the forefront as well, you know. So they were actually one of the first countries to get back playing in the last few months. So there's still a strong desire. Let's do talk
about it. And Graham, excuse me a moment, but Keith mentioned Greece. Greece, of course, were a pioneer's trip and are involved fully in the main World Cup next year.
Yeah. So tell us about that trip then, Jared. What year was that in?
Well, that was one of Keith's trips. Was it 2012, Keith, Greece?
Yeah, it was, Yeah, that was my first year managing, was that. So I just took over. So I just graduated, sort of a year out from sort of doing the pioneer stuff and then got offered the job. And, yeah, I took a team over to Greece. It was I think it was a bit different, actually, because we don't know what we're expecting, like you don't usually don't do. But I think we had three games planned. We got there. We played the first game and they got an absolute sort of spanking, I think, would be the simplest way to put it. But then they pulled in some other lads and some guys. I don't know if one of them from the mainland Greece had come over as well. Then we played them in there. They left the second game. We played them in the third game there. But, it was interesting. Again, not a bad setup. They had a lot of lads involved sort of locally. We played it all on roads. So, unfortunately, we weren't on the main island. But their whole plan was then is actually let's get it going in some of the islands around with a view to get these guys carrying through. So, that was great.
And as you see, Jared, there's Greece will be appearing in the Men's World Cup in 2021. So, yeah, fantastic. Let's just talk about Morocco, because I went to Morocco with Great Britain students in 1994. so weren't the pioneers, but a similar sort of, I'm sure, event. I was just a player at the time, so I wasn't involved really in the organisation, but I do remember at one point one of the games might be cancelled because of some issues with the pitch or something in terms of access and so on. So what was your experience, Keith?
I laugh about it now still. There was another team manager, Steve Curtis, who with us, and me and Steve are probably, I'm not saying opposites, but, you know, I'm quite sort of fluid with stuff and I understand, you know, things change and Steve loves to be organised. And one of the days, so we're going to the first match and Morocco went, right, we'll pick you up about 12 o'clock for a sort of 3 o'clock kickoff. Pitch is about an hour away. I thought, yeah, that's fine, it's reasonable. Got to 12 o'clock, they'd not turned up. And I was like, oh, right, this is a bit, you know, what's happening here? Then Steve was stressing. We phoned him up. They went, yeah, we'll be 10 minutes away. Don't worry, about 10 minutes away. I went, okay. I think half an hour, 40 minutes had gone by. And still weren't here. Phoned him up again. Yeah, don't worry, we're 10 minutes away. Anyway, we finally got there in the end. I think it was, we got to the pitch at 4 o'clock when we were supposed to be kicking off. All right, great. Not a great start. And when we got to the pitch, first we couldn't get in. Like you said, but actually when we saw the pitch, there were some of the biggest divots I'd ever seen in a pitch. It was like a JCB had gone in and dug half the pitch up, and then there were like bullfrogs just bouncing all over the place. We're like, right, I don't think we're playing here. Yeah, so that was interesting. So that was the first one. The second game were good, actually, there. So they finally got organised, played in a stadium, really good stadium. It must have been their local football stadium. So played the full game, but actually we had press and stuff on the sideline and so much to do with affiliation. They didn't quite get full affiliation as Rugby League and Rugby Union had the affiliation. Then there were some other politics involved with it, but the police ended up coming and turfing out all the press and anyone taking photos and stuff like that. So they let us finish off that game, but then after that, they cancelled any training slots we had, or the final game we're supposed to play got stopped, and there was a real stress actually that, and there weren't much we could do about it. So up and down, real shame, because actually you could see that they had the facilities for it were good, and actually they had a lot of teams and a lot of players wanting to play and who were quite passionate about it again. So it was a bit of a shame, really. But
it's interesting about training facilities there. Because when we went, we actually tried to train early in the morning because it's pretty hot. And we went to try and the training facilities weren't available in the morning. And I'm talking at 6:30, 7 o'clock. And we tried to go down to the beach, but it was filled with people playing football. Real shocker for the students. We couldn't get to train, so we just had to stay indoors. Anyway. So Jared, what are the trips then? Obviously, in that first few years, you got Estonia, you've got Ukraine and Norway. Where else did you lead people to?
Well, one of the places which for me was perhaps still one of the biggest achievements was in the Czech Republic. And I say that because they are now well established in the as part of the European Federation. And that was a terrific trip. I think it's the longest trip. Excellently organised by, again, one of our colleagues, Milan Martinek, who you've spoken with, I believe. We played a game, the opening test match, and then midweek we decided we would make a trip into Germany. And a colleague, Simon Cooper, who you mentioned, sadly, who is no longer with us, unfortunately, but Simon and his friend Leon, they organised a trip, a game for us in Germany, which was in southern Bavaria. We went there, it was an 8-hour coach ride, and on the Wednesday when we're due to play, the lightning hit us. So instead of visiting, instead of playing the game, we visited Hitler's nest in Berchtesgaden. And then we made our way back out to Germany to the Saturday and played in the smallest Czech Republic city named Olomouc. And just to show you the contrast in about experiences, some of it, as Keith has reflected, can be on the pitch. A lot of it's off the pitch. We went from Wednesday visiting the hideout or the secret place of Hitler, and on the Saturday, the pre-match presentation was with a Czech gentleman named Milos Dobry, who was a Holocaust survivor. So, you know, when we talk about this, what the pioneers are doing, it's more than rugby. It's more than culture. It's about understanding people.
Yeah, that's really interesting because, you know, absolutely about helping to take rugby league and introduce it in other countries. But it's also about the young lads that are going on the trip from the students' point of view to give them an experience to understand other cultures and also to understand some of history. Has that always been a facet running through it, even in your time as well, Keith?
Yeah, no, it has actually. Yeah, I remember we went to Poland, we went to Auschwitz. Actually, they took us on a tour around there, and again, the boys, it really opened their eyes to the world, I suppose. You know, a lot of these young adults out there coming through, you know, 18 to sort of mid-20s and stuff, and some of them won't have, you know, sort of seen that much. But yeah, no, it does carry through, and you can see it like that. So it's, you know, I'm trying to think of other places. We went to, like, Turkey as well. You know, they were going round. It's a totally different culture. Sort of there, obviously, you know, predominantly some parts of it is Muslim country, so the lads were just, I'm not saying getting their head around that, but, you know, sort of drinking and stuff was a bit of a taboo. Obviously, certain areas and different areas, it is very different, but yeah, we always make a big thing around the training weekend around the sort of cultural differences and, you know, sort of British culture versus, you know, going into another country, their culture is very, very different. And you've got to tread carefully sometimes as well, actually, because you want to pass that rugby league sort of mentality and culture across, but then you've got to sort of adapt it and pull it into what their culture is as well. So,
And that is probably about showing respect as well, isn't it, for the local traditions and laws, rather than just, you know, deciding that's how we do things.
Yeah, no, that's it. Yeah, and I think in Ghana, I remember some of the guys they did like a local dish and. Oh, God, it was a guy called Sylvestrin at the time who was organising. He had a laugh at first. He goes, look, they're not going to like it, but we thought we'll do it as a bit of a laugh. And it was basically like, not raw fish, but the fish. It was just basically fish heads in sort of a broth. And you could see all the guys were like, oh, I don't want to eat it, but I don't want to be disrespectful and leave it. So we're just too funny watching them all. But yeah, it's things like that. And again, it opens their eyes to see different things and, yeah, they have a good laugh at them at the same time.
Yeah, going back to Morocco, we on the last day had some local dish which was like a massive clay pot with meat cooked in it. It was actually really nice, but I actually then flew back to London, spent one day before flying out to New Zealand for a couple of months, you know, in a sort of further student vacation. I was being hosted by a couple for the first few days, but they didn't see me for the first few days. So they just sat in the toilet because I think this meat had been quite... obviously cooked locally for local taste, but certainly not for the more Western stomach. So yeah, I can understand that. But that's part of the beauty, as you say, you know, experiencing different cultures. So well, Keith, you obviously picked up the baton, and you know, what was that handover like? Because whilst you'd been a player, you know, obviously Gerard, and you talk about John Pearcey, had you know, instilled values. How did you carry them forward, and what else did you try to develop on the back of it?
Yeah, that was a good one. So first couple of years, really, we sort of kept it as is. And to be honest, it is as is as what it originally was. The whole concept is there around, you know, let's take the sport to a new country and test their arm. I suppose in some ways we've evolved a little bit in terms of, you know, that is internal and external brand, I suppose I would say. So internally, you know, like obviously well known within the student game, but probably not the wider game as such. So we're making that a bit more of a focus. And we've had a lot of lads who we've picked, you know, from a talent ID sort of pathway. So I suppose where we look at players is some guys who may be, you know, just be missed out of the system entirely. So, you know, we might have had a union player convert who's done really well at university but never thought to go on the talent pathway. So, you know, we'd take some of them on tour. We've had a couple of the rep coaches. So, you know, the England, Wales, Ireland students might mention a few players saying, look, we want to have a look at them, but just haven't got the time or capacity. Could you take a few of them and have a look? And then like Jed said, that sort of captain select, really, the reward for the guys who are doing a lot for the club and who would fit if we were going somewhere else. So, you know, we use that, and that internal branding's really helped us on that front. So, we, you know, I'd say we'd kept the values there originally about going to other countries, but actually we brought a bit of an internal sort of talent ID, and it's been really good to see quite a lot of players end up going, starting in the Pioneers and playing to full England, and some have gone on to Championship level. You know, these lads like, I think Joe McLean was one what sticks out, and then a really good lad, Billy Greenside, really sticks out. And I remember the coach at the time, Steve Hardesty, was at Huddersfield Giants doing their sort of player pathways. And he was saying it's a real shame that Billy had missed out, because if we'd have picked him up younger, he'd definitely be in that sort of Super League potential, really. So it just shows some of the quality of the players coming through. You know, I think he's playing out in Tier 1 Australia at the moment. But again, really good. And now again, players coming to us almost, you know, as well, doing it. And the coaches every year internationally asking for feedback. Do you know, have you had any good players who we've missed, and sending them in? So I think it's really good. I think it's really grown in a positive way from an initial fantastic concept, which is still at the heart of what we do, into more of actually how do we integrate that into our pathway as well, and move it up. So yeah, it's yeah, I suppose I say that's how it's probably evolved a bit.
And have you kept that concept, I think, that Gerard has talked about, where you take three or four players from the year before to sort of keep that, you know, the sort of people to educate and give some steadiness within the playing group? Is that something you've maintained?
Yeah, definitely. Do you know, it's a real bonus, actually, because, you know, it is a big challenge when you're coming through and you're together just for a day or so, and then you're on tour, basically, you know, clash of personalities, you know, everyone's slightly different. So bringing a few lads in from previous tours really does help. And also when we're out there as well, they'll take a bit of a leadership role in around what we're doing. So, you know, I think in Turkey, for example, some of the lads who've been back, they knew what we were doing. And actually, we did a bit of a session where the players would lead some of the coaching for some of their players. So we had some looking after the local kids and some were looking after the ladies team what were coming through. And those lads from the previous years took probably more of a leadership role within that and did it. And you know, we've had lads who've come back who really want to, you know, I suppose, better the coaching will be a good way to put in, and wanting to get into the coaching pathway themselves. And we've had a couple of them come back as staff as the year after. So we've been quite happy with them and thought we'd give them that other sort of experience to it as well.
So we've covered into Estonia, Ukraine, Norway, Greece, Ghana, Czech, Germany. Where else is we should be talking about? Who have we missed out in the countries visited?
Yeah, I suppose Albania was a good one. That was the most recent one. And I was really surprised, actually, there. So we did training with him. His name's gone from me now, but it was a guy from Hull and their academy.
Adam. Yeah,
Adam. That's it. He was he'd gone over and sort of set it all up and really pushed it and got a really good cohort of players together. And we had a pretty decent squad going over. And, you know, again, really well organised. We ended up going to the ambassadors for one evening. They hosted us for sort of a dinner party and, you know, a lot of, you know, just again, selling the sport, really. And he was saying, oh, it's great to see rugby finally coming over and taking a bit of a, you know, a bit of a foothold here. And then obviously on the game, you know, they were a fiery lot. I tell you, they were really, really tough boys. That first 20, 30 minutes, we were like, oh, you know, flipping heck, this is, it's going to be a bit of a close game here. But, you know, fortunately for us, that sort of last 15, 20 when fatigue kicks in and we had more of the skill took us through it. But, you know, again, really good country. And you can tell it's within their culture, actually, that sort of passion and pride that they're taking sort of off the pitch. They took it onto the pitch quite nicely. So, yeah, that was good. And I suppose another big one for me was Turkey. And I think Turkey sticks out mainly for me for the ladies bit. You know, we did one training session and I think it was Garol was saying, oh, look, you know, some ladies might come down and do some bits. And I think 30 ladies turned up and we played them as an opening game to the main men's game. A massive highlight and just show if you're well organised how quickly it can spread.
And of course, I think just at the end of the week there, St Helens have signed an Albanian player, which is, you know, I think he played against the Pioneers last year. That's quite amazing.
Yeah, yeah, I remember him actually. Him and his old man were there. It was his dad what were playing on the pitch, and the young lad was watching at the all time. Right. But yeah, I mean, remember we were chatting to him, and he was saying like, "Yeah, I really want to get into it." And you know, he says, "I'm hoping that I can come back here and actually share some of that and put a jersey on himself as well," which was good to see. Actually, because you know, if you get a lot of these sort of heritage type players on the fringes playing, it just makes the game a lot better and the competition a lot healthier as well. And it's probably one bridge still to work on, I think, is that some of the heritage players go into these countries like this, because some of those guys won't even know the playing as well.
So, Graham, can I make a link there? Adam, who Keith has mentioned, Adam Vernon is the lad in Albania. He also played with Ireland students. He was a student himself at Chester Uni. So that's just one of the elements of continuity. Adam has almost gone around the world since then. He's lived in Japan, but he's now settled in Albania. And it's through the Student Rugby League and all our links that we've been able to help that country develop in the way it's doing so well, as Keith has explained.
Yeah, indeed. And there's lots of links. Like, I can think of someone like Andy Fairhurst, who myself and Keith would know at Leeds Accies, who went out and helped a lot at Czech Rugby League as well. So, yeah, it's amazing the tentacles that can be produced from these kind of experiences. Just focus back on Ghana for a little bit, because obviously, you know, being to Morocco, so I'm looking at places outside of the European mainland, that must have been a really different cultural experience for those players.
It was again. I suppose there, it was almost they used to traveling around a lot. You know, you had lads there who were, you know, really respectful, actually. There's a clear hierarchical sort of culture there, you know, sort of, you know, obviously stemming from parents, etc. But we had Martin Crick, obviously, you know, worked with us at Accies and coached me there. And it was good to see him there. But he was coaching the Ghanaians there. So, you know, getting him to share some stories around what he'd done with them and stuff was good. But yeah, culture, very, very different. Lads were travelling up to an hour and a half just to get to training. But again, they loved it. And they were absolute specimens, I suppose, would be the only way to say it. They were just absolute, just powerful units getting through. And again, not a bad game. Physical, I suppose. And they did love the physicality. You know, you see, we've been at some countries where the physicality is a bit of a shock to them. But actually there in Ghana, they did love it and they enjoyed it.
Well, I witnessed that firsthand last year at the Middle East Africa Championships in Nigeria, and there were some fantastic athletes. I thought they had good knowledge of rugby league, but the outstanding thing was the athletic ability. Mm-hmm. And I mean in that in terms of just size, muscularity, but also the footwork and strength in the tackle. You know, not big 6'5" people, but just really strong individuals. You know, guys who are just difficult to put down. And then in a tackle, hit you pretty hard. Was that the experience you had as well?
Yeah, no, exactly that, Graham, actually. It was, you know, some of them, like you said, you know, sort of average size lads, but, you know, fit, muscular and quite nimble on the feet, which was a bit of a shocker for some of the boys. They're like, bloody hell, how's he stepped through there, or how's he shifted that quick off the mark? So again, that part of the world, I think there's some real potential there. He probably just needs a bit more sort of structure and guidance out there, but yeah, definitely.
So listen,
Graham, as well, we've also visited Asia, Keith went there to Turkey, but the furthest east we went was into Kazakhstan. And we played in a town, and I've looked at it on the map. I think we were about 25 miles from the border with China. We played two games over there. One of them, we travelled across the Kazakhstan steppe in this minibus. There was 26 of us in two minibuses with loads of kit and everything else you could think of. But we travelled for 4 hours and played a game out there. Then we did the coaching sessions with a bunch of school kids. There were about 200 school kids. And then we travelled back to the major city, Almaty. And at the end of the week, we played another game, this time in a really good stadium with a 3,000 crowd. 3,000 made up of the Kazakhstan army.
Yeah.
Because they were on the training camp next door. And they were on manoeuvres, literally in the field next to us. And as they finished, guess what? They all migrated into the stands. And I think the Kazakh lads, I think we beat them something like 50 points to 4. When they scored the 4, golly, was there one heck of a cheer going up?
Tell me, Jared, just tell me what the travel is to get to that furthest point in terms of number of flights and minibuses, just to give the idea the kind of commitment levels. If you can
Kazakhstan, I think I can remember all of these. Kazakhstan, in many ways, was not the worst because we flew via Manchester to Amsterdam out into the principal city, Almaty. The interesting bit of that story was we arrived at 4 o'clock in the morning, and of course, being a former Russian state, we all needed visas. So out of a party of, I'll say 25, 24 of us passed through okay at 4 o'clock in the morning. Unfortunately, to find one of our lads was refused entry. John McCoy, a lad from Bolton, who was playing at Leeds City, they wouldn't let him in. And when we inspected it, his visa was date stamped for the month previous. So they turned him round, put him back on the plane, and unluckily sent him home. We then, my colleague John, spent 3 days on the phone with everyone possible. And then the player, John, visited the embassy in London, got his visa stamped, and flew back out with us midweek to arrive for the final game in front of the Kazakh army. So that was like a brilliant, just little episode. But the best one, perhaps.
Sorry, Jared, can I just ask you, I hope he got a starting place. Did he get a full match and a starting place, the lad? Because he would be due that, wouldn't he?
I think we put him on the bench and gave him 2 minutes because we thought he deserved it. No, he had a good game. He played scrum half, John, and he was really good for us.
Sorry, you were going to go into the next story as well there.
Yeah, Keith touched on the other one, but Ukraine, which was fascinating in many ways, but we flew from Manchester to Latvia, again by Ryanair, because we're always looking for the cheapest way. Then from Latvia to the capital, Kiev. And we arrived early morning, but the only way we could get into the city, we were playing in the second city of Ukraine named Kharkiv, which is across the eastern border. And that required the famous, like, Russian overnight trains. I don't know if you've ever done those trips, but they actually go not at express speed. They do they rumble on at 40 miles an hour. So wherever you're going, every journey takes 12 hours. And this was the one that Keith mentioned, where it had this toilet that was a hole in the floor. It was worse than that because it was a rusty hole in the floor. And we did have one member of our party who had the runs, and the first thing he did getting on the train was to spend the rest of the next 12 hours in the toilet, unfortunately. And then we arrived at Kharkiv, played, spent the week. On the return, the only way we could get back was again via Latvia, but this time we stayed overnight. Now, that was great because Latvia itself was one of our countries the year before. So we were able to back up a little bit and see what happened. Keith was with us on here, and he'll remember we played this game out in the Latvian woods outside Riga, where we had to cut short the pitch because the in-goal area had this chunk of concrete about 20 yards long. So we got the cones and shortened the pitch by 10 metres and put the try line on the 10 metres marked out by the cones.
Yeah. So just building on that, I'm going to ask each of you, you know, this whole idea of the pioneers is you're going to new areas, you've got to be ready for the unexpected. Give me a memory of when you've turned up somewhere and thought, right, this is not how we thought it was going to be, but we'll just have to find a way through it and make of it what we can and make the best of it. Keith, what springs to mind for you in that regard?
I think Poland is probably what really springs to mind. So, firstly, I think we finding like cones was near enough impossible. We ended up going to a shop and buying a load of lemons. Me and Steve had a stain. We had to chop them in half and mark a pitch and a sideline with lemons, which was, I think, a first time for that. But I suppose really there, it's we turned up. We clearly not probably done some of us, you know, I'm not saying due diligence, but probably didn't do some of his checks that we should have done. And there were just 16-year-olds and 17, maybe a couple of 18-year-old lads there. And, you know, playing against a team of men, basically. So it was, that was like, oh, bloody hell, we're going to have to make this work somehow. But, you know, credit to the boys, and they really did. We got a couple of games out of it, and they did really make it work. Did a lot of coaching with them, and there was a lad, James Schmick, who was sort of leading the student rugby league at the time as well. So, you know, he came over as a ref that year, and he's still heavily involved with them. So it's been good to see those players, sort of coming through. But again, really hard. And after that, I think we really changed what we did in terms of his approach and pre-screening almost, you know, country, if we're going to go there, to make sure that don't happen again. It was, again, they got loads out of it, but probably our boys didn't get as much out of it as what they did. But in the end, they did, and they made it work, and everyone had a really, really good time in the end.
Gerard, for you, what memory sticks out?
It's quite hard because I could probably throw a few in, but I'll just run with this one. On our first trip to Latvia, we were ready for the game. We said, right, guys, where do we go? And we were told to catch the local bus, which we did. It was a 50-minute bus ride to the end of the terminus with another 20-minute walk. And when we eventually arrived, we found ourselves in the middle of this, I can only describe it as like the sort of things you see on a film of the Russian interior, with this council estate, with these tenement blocks. And there was a field in the middle, marked out with sawdust. And no changing rooms. The lads got changed on the side of the field, played the game with the sawdust, and then we had the return journey with a walk, with a bus ride back to our hostel in the middle of Riga again. And that was just typical. It used to be a thing when I recruited the guys, I would always ask them, how would you cope with this? We turn up, we go somewhere, and then I have to tell you all to get back on the bus. And it was the lad who said, that sounds like a bit of fun. Those were the lads I was looking for. The ones who said, oh, that's a load of rubbish, or other words. You know, they could be great lads, but they weren't the characters we needed on these trips.
Sure. Just out of interest, Keith, you raise an interesting point about match officials. Did the pioneers, and this is a question to you as well, Jared, did you take match officials out with you, or has that been different places, different approaches, perhaps using local officials as well?
Yeah, so for us, we've always taken a ref out with us and just following on suit from what we did normally, really. Apart from last year, we had a guy called Antti Mikalev, you know, from Malta. He came over and refed it, so I got in touch with him recently, and then he came over and did this one. You know, some questions on his refereeing, I'm sure he won't mind me saying that. But again, it got us thinking, actually, couldn't we get some of these other countries to send a ref over as opposed to us sending it? But we do a bit of ref education at the same time as well. So it's,
critical again to get take the right type of referee with you, because again, just like yourselves as players, you're educating the opposition, and the referee's got a role to play there as well, haven't they? To really help the opposition, not just to have the game well officiated, but to help educate them and get the most out of them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, one of them. Oh God, well, where was it? Is it? I think it might have been Budapest. The ref came up to me and went, "Oh, K-flat, what? Bloody hell, I should be pinging him here and I should be this." And I went, "Well, you know what? Take it in your stride. Yeah, I'm sure you'll know what's to blame and what isn't." But yeah, so some of the refs they've really enjoyed it and took a lot from it, the ones we've taken in the past. There's a few lads who are doing the championship and stuff now. So they're used to that fast-paced and suppose, you know, relatively small error rate, depending on what game you're watching. But again, you know, taking it over was a good challenge for them. And they had to adapt their skills as well, I suppose, in terms of how they refed.
Keith will remember one of the referees we used to use is a lad named Chris Reynolds, because Chris had the great good fortune that he spoke he was fluent in Russian. So when we were on our trips to Latvia, Kazakhstan, Ukraine, he was a perfect bloke, absolutely the perfect bloke. But he had that right spirit again, and he did coach the new guys as and when they needed it.
Yeah, listen, I think that the right spirit sounds like it's alive and well. You know, we're 15 years and going strong, which is fantastic. And there's just a wonderful list here of countries that we've covered, and there's no doubt that the GB, you know, student pioneers have played their role in developing the game in Europe. So that, thank you to both of you for the commitment you've given, and to your colleagues that you've mentioned as well. And then there's now really a really large, you know, alumni of these trips, the players as well, what they've got out of it. So listen, thank you so much to both you, Keith and Gerard, for sharing your memories. Really enjoyed it. Thanks, Jess.
Pleasure, Graham.
Cheers, Tom.
So, folks, that's the end of this week's episode. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time again. And we hope that you're still enjoying your rugby league, more and more of it being played around Europe, albeit there is, you know, concerns about a second wave of COVID. But I hope you, your families and your rugby league communities are staying safe. Thank you.